I mean, I'm Dirk Diggler. Brock Landers is a character that I'm playing. He's a law enforcement type of guy who is hired by people to stop these bad individuals. You know, I mean, how do you stop bad individuals? By saying, please, you know, stop drug smuggling and, you know, extorting and jewelry sales and stuff like that. What are you supposed to do? You know, it's like in law enforcement, the one thing I learned when studying and preparing for this character was you have to deal with people in the way they're dealing with you. Criminals are violent. I'm dealing with murderers. You know, these women are obviously beautiful, but that is like a cover-up. That's like their costume. These people are wicked, bad people. You know, and myself and Chest are every day putting our lives on the line to fight for justice. You know, Chest is always fighting for vengeance, for people who can't stand up and can't protect themselves. And I think it's important.
I'll tell you what, if I was looking for a best friend in life, I would want Chest Rockwell. You know what I mean? Because that guy, he'll take a bullet, he'll take a nunchuck, stand in the way of a karate blow, karate. Dirk would kill me for that. We can change that. He'd stand in the way of a karate blow. Basically, he backs up Brock in any situation, and he's a master of the nunchuck. And I can't actually do this yet. I've been working with a sensei. You can block a bullet with a nunchuck. And I have seen film of guys doing it. I'm not able to do it at this time. But if you bring that thing quick enough, you can't block the bullet. You can deflect the bullet. You can send the bullet in another direction.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Well, I never thought I would make it here today. I would be a great class president because I promised to put 2 new pop machines in the cafeteria, and I'm also going to get a glitter Bonnie Bell dispenser for all the girls' bathrooms. Oh, we're going to get new cheerleading uniforms. Anyway, I think I'd be a great class president, so who wants to eat chimichangas next year? Not me. See, with me, it will be summer all year long. Vote for summer.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
Chimichangas.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Let me guess. Okay, the first one was an Anthony Weiner thing.
No.
And the second has to do with Palin's speech at Ellis Island, right?
Sorry. Well, you batted 500 on that one.
Oh, no.
They were both Sarah Palin.
No.
It's a word salad is what it is. They're both, yeah. I mean, that's the first one is from Boogie Nights. That's actually,
well, sure.
It's a deleted scene. That wasn't in the full movie in that the fake documentary in the middle of it about Dirk Diggler. That was an outtake, which is one of my favorite things that isn't in the movie. It's actually one of my favorite things from the movie, but it's not in the movie.
That's a funny one.
So funny. You could block a bullet with a nunchuck.
You can't.
John C. Reilly is easily one of the best improvisers in film today.
Yeah. He was such a tragic character in that movie.
Oh, he was. Yeah. Oh, you mean Mark Wahlberg's character?
Well, both of them, really. I mean, there's just something really just sad and tragic about almost everybody in that movie.
Well, what's fascinating about the character Mark Wahlberg played, it was so layered. You had Mark Wahlberg. It was Mark Wahlberg playing Eddie Adams, who played Dirk Diggler, who played Brock Landers. So you talk about layers to a character. You had an actor playing an actor playing an actor, playing a detective.
Right.
So, it is a great scene just for bullshitting. I mean, and in the actual film, when they do that documentary, there's even more bullshitting about, you know, fighting in the vein of justice and liberty and
vengeance,
yeah.
Vengeance.
Blocking bullets with nunchucks. And then the second piece was from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, sure.
Vote for summer speech.
Vote for summer.
Do you want chimichangas?
Chimichangas.
Not me.
Real Americans don't want chimichangas. Mm-hmm. They don't want that Dream Act.
The other thing that got me thinking about Mark Wahlberg is I watched The Fighter. I got The Fighter from Netflix over the weekend.
Best boxing movie since Rocky.
Easily.
Yeah. Oh, my God, it was so good.
Although, the boxing movie I really, really like, and is Cinderella Man.
Yeah, it's good. I think I was on Overload with him, like Gladiator dude, Cameron Crowe, whatever.
Russell Crowe.
I was just on him Overload when that came out, so I didn't see it for like 3 years, but then I finally Netflixed it, and that was a good movie.
Yeah, there's a shitload of good Russell Crowe movies, and Cinderella Man's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Where he played James J. Braddock. But yeah, The Fighter was exceptional. I mean,
amazing.
In terms of the story itself, it was kind of typical of a boxing movie, but it didn't rest on that. It in that format, it was outstanding. Yeah. I mean, everything about it was so good. I mean, Mark Wahlberg, who the previous movie I had seen with Mark Wahlberg in it was that terrible M. Night Shyamalan movie.
The Happening,
where he goes, what's the line? They all are ushered off of the train, and they're standing around saying, there's a bunch of the conductors are standing in a circle just like bullshitting, you know. Yeah. There's all this chaos happening, all no one knows what the hell's going on, and they're just standing around, you know, shooting the shit, and Mark Wahlberg runs up and goes, "Don't you know what's going on? There's an incident somewhere in the vicinity. In this area, there's something happening." And it's just like this awful, awful, awful performance.
Yeah, that's one of the worst movies. It's not his fault. He's a great, great actor.
Oh, he is.
An amazing actor.
He is.
But that was one of the worst movies I think I've ever seen.
Mark Wahlberg's a great actor with the right director. I mean, you put Mark Wahlberg with Paul Thomas Anderson, or you put, I forget who directed, David O. Russell directed, directed The Fighter. And you put them with the right other talent. I mean, you put them opposite John C. Reilly, and they're improvising. Nothing could be better than Mark Wahlberg and John C. Reilly, other than Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed that movie, The Other Guys.
The Other Guys, yeah.
I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Oh, yeah,
and
he was
hysterical in Date Night, Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, because Mark Wahlberg was then in The Other Guys with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
So there's some sort of weird nexus of Mark Wahlberg happening now, I think.
Indeed. But yeah, I'd never heard of that fighter that he played. I'm not a real boxing kind of aficionado, but I mean, I enjoy a good boxing movie, but I'd never really heard of that fighter that he played in that movie. So while I was watching it, I was like, what? So I started YouTubing the actual clips, and I just couldn't believe how true to the true story they were, how closely, how accurate it was. It was really fascinating.
Now, I haven't had a chance to go in and look and find out about the fighter. And you know who I want to learn about is the Christian Bale character. Now, we spent a lot of time here at the top talking about Mark Wahlberg. The elephant in the room in that movie is Christian Bale.
Yeah, he's gonna kill himself. I mean, he's literally going to, he keeps going up and down these physical roller coasters. Right. He's such a method actor. I mean, like for The Machinist, you could like see through him.
Yeah,
if he stood sideways, he'd disappear. He was so, I mean, he dropped like 80 pounds or something for that. It was ridiculous.
It was a corpse. Yeah.
And then he went right from that to the first Batman, to Batman Begins, where he put on like 100 pounds of muscle.
Yeah.
You just can't do that to your body. You can't just go up and down like that. He's going to give himself a heart attack.
Yeah, and I noticed in this movie, he had done it in a strange – he had lost a bunch of weight, but in a strange way. He had lost
like
a bunch of weight.
Yeah, like he was saggy and unhealthy looking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he did it so he could look like he was a crack addict. His character is a crack addict.
Yeah.
But he did it in a way in which you could believe that he was once a boxer, that he had like muscle tone to him.
Right.
So he's got this he's got this gaunt, emaciated face like he had in The Machinist. But then he's got sort of this ripped,
wiry,
body.
Kind of lean muscle. Yeah.
Like he could actually kick some ass if he wanted to. And so how the fuck do you do it? I know in The Machinist, in the bonus features of that movie, he talks about how the way he lost all that weight was he ate one apple and one glass of water a day. And that was the diet he went on for.
I mean, that's just crazy. You can't do that to your body.
No, you can't.
That is just wrong. I've never seen a human being look like I could have sworn there was some CGI or something going on in that movie, because he was just so, he looked like a concentration camp victim.
Yeah. Every time Christian Bale comes up, Joy always says, you know, he's going to die of renal failure.
He is.
It's like at any moment, his kidneys are going to just explode.
Right. Something's going to backfire on him because, I mean, his next movie, he'll play a sumo wrestler and he'll gain 500 pounds.
Yeah.
He'll eat nothing but Twinkies and Ring Dings and then his heart will explode. I mean, God love him. He's a fantastic actor. He's amazing. Yeah. I mean, just amazing. I've been a fan of his since Empire of the Sun, since he was, you know, like 10. He was that little boy in and it was a Steven Spielberg movie. It's a great movie about the occupation of the Japanese occupation of someplace, Hong Kong, I don't know, something like that. Yeah. Great movie, but he's been around forever.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to get too that about it, but you know, if I had the body he had in American Psycho, I wouldn't do anything ever again to my I would just keep doing whatever that was he was doing.
Right, he wasn't an American Psycho. That was
I'm talking about Christian Bale, American Psycho.
No. Oh, American Psycho. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I was thinking. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen a physique like that. Those abs. Oh Jesus.
Yeah. He right.
That movie just makes me laugh with my teeth showing.
That's
it. Makes me laugh so much. He is so funny in that movie. People that just don't get that movie. I don't understand people that don't get that movie.
No.
That movie was hilarious.
It's scary. It is.
Don't
very,
just
very
look
funny.
At it. Eat it.
Eat it.
Best line in any movie ever. Don't just look at it. Eat it.
He is. I mean that. And my favorite scene in the movie in that movie is, and you can tell once again. By the way, slow news week.
You like Huey Lewis in the news?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Best.
Okay. Early work was a little too new wave for my taste. But when sports came out in 83, I think they really came into their own, commercially and artistically. The whole album has a clear, crisp sound and a new sheen of consummate professionalism that really gives the songs a big boost.
See, you know what it is? You know what's funny about that is he's basically reciting verbatim the worst record review that has ever been written. Right. Like every cliche that you would ever read in Rolling Stone or Spin Magazine or something. Consummate professionalism. That's all the kind of shit. What an amazing repertoire. You know, that's all the kind of shit that you read in really bad. Like you go and you pick up one of those free newspaper weeklies like at a diner near your house.
Right. You know, city paper.
A city paper around town, something like that.
Yeah.
And every record review in that reads exactly like...
Yeah.
Christian
well, that's
Bale
the whole
American
point
Psycho.
Of his character in that movie, and in the book is he's just an absolute, he's just a soulless carton of 80s pointlessness.
Yeah,
yeah.
Trying desperately to do what everyone else is trying so desperately to conform.
Yeah, yeah. And rise right. It had the best. I mean, the whole thing with the business cards, where he just gets psychotic over the business cards. I mean, it's just so 80s. You really just had to have experienced the vacuousness of the 80s to get that movie, I guess.
So what is it, what is the name of the card stock that the one card is on? Cillian Gray or something?
Right. He's like just, and he just gets in such a panic about it. He's so pissed off. He's amazing. I've never seen a British actor be able to do away with his accent as well as he can. I almost think he fakes the British accent, that he actually is American.
Well, yeah, him and Hugh Laurie are both you'd never know that they were British when you hear
Hugh Laurie's less adept at hiding it. Like because I've been a Hugh Laurie fan since like the 80s. I mean, Bit of Fry and Laurie with his show with Stephen Fry and from Blackadder. So I can't listen to him as an American without thinking of him as, you know, most people just experienced him as House, but I've been a fan of his since, I mean, for 20, 25 years. So that's harder for me. But Christian Bale, he just completely loses it, his accent. I don't know how he does that.
Yeah.
Seems to be easier for British people to fake being American than vice versa, though.
Right, and you know they're producing the next Batman movie now. In fact, I believe they're shooting it. So he's gone from The Fighter to this Batman movie. Did he do anything in between? Yeah, I mean, it's just staggering what he ends up putting his body through, and now he's stepping right from being a crack addict to being Batman.
Right. And he really does muscle up for those Batmans. I mean, he hides it all under the suit, but he really does bulk up a lot.
Well, I think he's the best Batman. I'm a serious Batman fan, and so whenever there's a new Christian Bale, Christopher Nolan Batman movie, everyone comes out of the woodwork and bitches about his Batman voice.
Yeah, that growly thing he does.
I don't mind that though, because Batman is supposed to be nasty and intimidating. He's not supposed to be like, Come, young ward, let us go, citizens, and fight crime.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It is a little annoying. It's a little off-putting. Like, it kind of takes you out of the scene. But everything else about that, I mean, Christopher Nolan can do absolutely no wrong as far as I'm concerned. That guy, I mean, I saw Inception four or five times in the theater. That movie just kicked my ass.
Mind-blowing.
Fucking love that movie. God, I love that movie. I've seen it a couple times since I got it on the Blu-rays, so... That's just a great, great movie. Christopher Nolan. But Memento remains my favorite Christopher Nolan movie of all time.
Well, both movies are works of a genius. Yeah. I mean, the screenplay for Inception alone should qualify Christopher Nolan as being one of the smartest, at least one of the smartest writers in the history of literature, of filmmaking, art,
Literature. But filmmaking for sure. But I personally think the Memento script is more brilliant than Inception. I mean, I can understand how Inception got written. I don't see how you come up with the idea for Memento, much less write it the right way. And I was, the first time I saw it, I was shit drunk. I was so drunk. It was like on a lunch break at work.
and just drink it down and say, I got to go watch the most complicated storyline in the history of modern cinema and just drink the whole time.
Yeah, right. We took a fifth of vodka with us and bought a large, you know, one of those super colossal large beverages, poured half of it out, poured the rest of it with it, filled it back up with vodka, and got just hammered by the first hour. We were gone, so it made no sense to me whatsoever. So I had to, you know, buy it on DVD, and then I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I still can't believe, and I think he wrote it or co-wrote it with his brother. I think he and his, or it was like a short story first or something, but that is just an amazing movie.
Mind blowing. What they do is they're not satisfied with drafts 1 through 30, right?
No.
I mean, they're going
through.
Like,
it took 10 years to write Inception.
Yeah. They're just swapping things around and living that script and doing, yeah. I mean, that's what you almost have to do, unless you're like a certifiable genius and you can just shit out something complex like that, which is entirely possible. But for it to work also, not only just on a script level, but also on a storytelling level, on presenting it to an audience level.
Yeah. And I was surprised Inception did as well as it did at the box office, given how complicated and twisty it was. I mean, it just didn't seem like it had, you know, wide box office appeal, and it did really, really well, which is you know, it's encouraging that there are that many people. I don't know if it did really well because people had to keep going back to see it to fucking understand it.
Well, that's I'm going to say spoiler alert now. Spoiler alert, please. If you don't want to know the ending of Inception, skip over the next 2 minutes of the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to give you a second here. Just get ready to skip, because we're going to talk about the ending of Inception.
All right, while we're giving you a minute, I'll tell you that the hot club singer in The Crying Game has a dick. So now we can proceed.
There you go. So what do you think? He spins the top at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Does it fall? Is he dreaming or is he awake? Is it reality?
Yeah, see, back when I saw it 4 or 5 times in the theater, I had all these complicated theories and everything. But here's what I'd rather say. I think he really missed the boat in telling that story by not having the guy come back, not having Leo's character come back and just pick it up and make the decision not to know, right? I think that he was purposefully ambiguous to let you just kind of write your own ending. I think he was still incepted or whatever. I think it's still just part of a larger dream somewhere. But I think the Leo's character should turn right around and just grabbed it before it fell and not let it make that, you know, not, and just not know. Cause then that could have remained ambiguous, but also made him master of, you know, he's just like, fuck it, I'm here. So who cares? I just don't want to know. That's what he should have done.
Yeah.
But I think it was still, I think there are enough clues throughout the film to tell you that he's still in some level of a dream somewhere.
Well, either way, you know, kind of still fucks with your head.
It totally does.
It's kind of the finale of The Sopranos kind of, God damn you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think it would have made more sense for that character because he was so about the rules of it all and having the top and having the token or the totem, whatever it was, to get you out of it and so that you know. And if he had just self-actualized and grabbed it and taken away that mechanism, then it would have just – then we all could have just kind of sighed and gone, okay, so really – doesn't matter to him, so it doesn't matter to us. Fuck it.
Right. Well, God damn it. There's – what was I watching the other day that had one of the actors for the fourth? Oh, you know what I saw the other day that the actor playing Bane in the new Batman movie.
Is it the guy that was from Inception?
The guy from Inception, yeah. And he also played Shinzon.
Yes,
in that Star Trek movie.
The worst Star Trek movie, yeah. He's a great actor. Tom Hardy.
That was not the worst Star Trek movie. The worst Star Trek movie was the one with the wanting to live forever and the facelift aliens. That was the worst Star Trek movie.
The Insurrection, yeah.
Insurrection.
That was the worst one, yeah. But all of those next-gen movies sucked balls.
Yeah, they did.
Really.
And the only reason I'm mentioning that, I think that was sci-fi's version of like some sort of Memorial Day military thing. Because Sci-Fi Channel did the Star Trek marathon.
Oh, yeah, from like starting at number one.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, I ended up watching, I ended up seeing as I was working on Monday, I saw Star Trek VI.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Undiscovered Country.
Undiscovered Country, yeah.
I love the shit out of the movie. That's because Nick Myers came back, who did Wrath of Khan. That guy's a genius. I don't know why he's not at working more, but he came back and he put the Nick Myers stink all over number six, and that was actually a really enjoyable, fun Star Trek-y kind of movie.
Yeah.
Even though you could see the production values, it like Paramount gave him like $12.50 to make that movie.
Yeah. The Praxis, the moon.
It was just
obviously
awful.
A painting. Especially, yeah.
Yeah. The fucking uniforms are falling apart. You know, it's like a sleeve ripped here and the collars are all falling apart. Yeah. But it was just a decent, solid story. It was a great way for them to go out, for that crew to go out, mm-hmm. to get Nick Myers back. That guy should work more.
Yeah. But the guy, yeah. So, sort of dovetailing Star Trek with Batman.
Yeah.
Or that guy. And he evidently is playing, and I can't remember the name of the actor who we're talking about.
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy, there you go. And he's playing Bane in the new Batman movie. But he, so I wanted to learn more about what he's done recently. Because
yeah,
evidently
he did a boxing movie where he put on like 300 pounds of muscle.
Yeah, he's like massive.
You wouldn't even recognize him.
Yeah, and so he also played the British serial killer maniac Charles Bronson.
Bronson. In the movie called Bronson. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Which I think
he's
still
a great actor. He's really compelling to watch. He's one of my favorite parts of Inception. Mm. Was just the way he that character that he made in that movie. He's fascinating to watch. Really good looking guy too.
So, hey, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. I'm Bob. That's Elvis. Show today brought to you, as it always is, by BubbleGenius.com at www.BubbleGenius.com. Go there for the best goddamn soap ever and lots of bath and body products. We'll hear more from them in a bit. As I said before, it is very much another. It's like maybe the third week in a row where there's really kind of just bullshit happening in politics, yeah. Where there's no real groundbreaking stories yet, but there's some on the horizon, and we want to cover some of that a little bit. We're going to talk about Sarah Palin. We're going to talk about this bullshit Andrew Breitbart scam, and we're going to talk about housing prices, which are kind of looking scary. But the Sarah Palin thing, we have to talk about this, and then go away from it.
The big news today isn't that Romney officially announced.
Well, Romney announced, yeah.
We're not just thrilled about that.
Yeah, I don't know. We all knew that was going to happen. We all know that he's going to get the nomination. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
No, I don't know if I know that for sure.
Oh, he absolutely is. They're not going to nominate anyone else.
I don't know. You and I both know who the nut jobs are that do the nominating. He may be the most nationally viable candidate, but I don't know if he's the most primary nominatable candidate.
Well, the Republicans are insane and they don't know what they're doing and they're all about marketing, but they know they at least know where the votes are, and the votes are in the middle. And so, at least in middle in term, I'm conflating things. They're independent votes, which could be far right, could be far left, could be in the middle. It doesn't matter. So, I mean, we're talking about independent, non-affiliated voters. Those are the people who decide elections. And so in order to get those people, they've got to run someone like Romney, or previously it was McCain. Even George W. Bush in 2000 ran as sort of a middle kind of guy.
Moderate, yeah. Moderate, but kind of I don't know. I don't think the primary electorate is the same now as even it was in 2008. I think it's moved radically to the right. I don't think the primary electorate in the GOP today would have elected McCain. I think it's moved so dramatically to the right since 2008 and become so teabagged and insane and evangelical and or even more evangelical. I just think this base, this primary base, I just don't know if Romney's going to come out on top of that crew. I mean, right now with Palin, you know, Palin and Romney are running neck and neck. I think they're – and I don't know if you saw Lawrence O'Donnell's thing about how she's not running, his little rant there about you know, all the indicators are that she's not. I tend to agree with him. I think this is just a big fuck you to the media, and it's just a circus to inflate her speech, you know, her per plate costs. But I just don't know if Romney's attractive enough to the primary voters. I don't know.
Well, I think he is, and I think he's not going to do very well in Iowa. He may squeak out a win in Iowa, but I still think that one of the wingnuts will win in Iowa, and then he'll get, you know, he'll get New Hampshire, South Carolina, and he'll start to pick up some of the more decisive primaries will swing his way, which is the way it generally always happens. You get lots of crazies in Iowa. And then things kind of settle, and you get the sort of the social conservatives coming out in Iowa, and then the real people come out in the other primaries, caucuses. Mm-hmm. And so that's where Romney will pick up his votes. But I mean, no one else has a shot at all. Even Chris Christie were to listen to people and actually get in there. First of all, there's a couple of things about Chris Christie, and I hate to be so crass about it. I don't know if he could survive a presidential campaign. I mean, I don't want to be like a body.
He's
Nazi
not that
like,
morbidly obese.
He is gigantic. Did you see the film of him getting off of that helicopter at his kid's baseball game?
Yeah.
He's like an ass and a head. I mean, he is like you know the fat kid on the Little Rascals. He's got that where the pants have to be hiked way up to like the pecs up to the man boobs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way Chris Christie has to wear his pants. This guy, I don't believe his body could withstand the rigors of a presidential campaign unless he's like, really like 23 years old and he's got and he just looks older because of his unhealthy lifestyle. But I mean, that's a major factor. I mean, people need to ask about, just as they were asking about McCain's age and his cancer, people need to ask themselves if this guy's even survivable through not only through a campaign but through a presidency, for God's sake.
Yeah, Bill Maher said something about that the other day, and we were talking about he rolled it off and said, no, people love, you know, we love fat people in this country, but I don't think we do. I mean, even as fat as we are, we don't like fat in our celebrities or in our politics. I can't imagine America electing Taft today, you know, just a big fat douche. I think there's a certain virility or a certain implied lack of virility to the morbidly obese. I don't think he would popularity wise just squeak through in national politics. He's too big and fat for people to vote for. I think I don't think we do like fat when it comes to our leaders. I can't think of the last really. I mean, Bubba Clinton, and people made fun of Clinton for being fat, and he really wasn't all that.
He really wasn't. I mean, it was could probably outrun any of us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was. He was.
I mean,
portly. He was certainly a big boned gentleman, but he certainly wasn't morbidly obese.
Yeah, and what's the one thing everyone remembers about Taft? He had a special bathtub installed in the White House so he could actually fit his body into it so he could bathe.
Yeah.
So that he had service.
And he had that
with
walrus mustache
with like rags on a stick to wash him off. You know, like.
But he was a big fat man. But back then, I mean, you know, there was just no media. So people, it's like FDR. No one knew that fucker was in a wheelchair. Yeah. Well, also, it's like, Taft is big and fat. I didn't, I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, back then, if you were larger, it meant you were healthy.
Prosperity, right. You could afford to eat. Yeah. Right. And it still means that in many, many countries today. Mm-hmm. If you're bloated from starvation.
Here's the other reason Chris Christie won't get in. At this point in the polls, Obama beats Christie in New Jersey.
Oh, wow. In New Jersey?
Yeah. I think that was, PPP. I think that was the most recent poll in PPP. They polled President Obama versus Chris Christie in the in New Jersey in a general election, presidential election.
That's
President
sad.
Obama gets the electoral votes from New Jersey.
And you can't run. He couldn't, even if he wanted to, you can't run having just gotten your ass handed to you by your own state Supreme Court. Yeah. You know, that's not a good starting whistle to go on. You can't go out and sign all these laws and then have your own Supreme Court kick in the balls and then go, hey, I want to be president.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they just said, look, your fucking education thing is unconstitutional. You're a big jackass. We're going to put $500 million back. You suck.
Yeah.
You can't. That's not a rallying cry for a national campaign.
Right. Well, I also think they all anticipated that. Like the Republicans in Indiana knew that there was no way that they were going to get away with defunding all of these things. And so, you know, Health and Human Services has basically said you can't restrict Planned Parenthood, you know, or Medicaid money going to Planned Parenthood. You just can't do that. So sorry, it's illegal. It's not going to happen. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah. So this,
you think they're just throwing
happen.
Everything they can at the wall and seeing what sticks?
Yeah.
Let the Supreme Court straighten it out.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Chris Christie, too. This is J.M. Ashby on the blog here. Most recent thing on the blog. On Tuesday, May 24th, New Jersey Supreme Court ruled that education cuts proposed by Governor Chris Christie represented, quote, a deprivation of the constitutional right to a thorough and efficient education to all at-risk children throughout the state. And ordered the state to spend $500 million more on education than was allocated in Chris Christie's budget.
That's what I just said.
Yeah.
The way.
So, I mean, I got to read the official news story here, too.
Oh, the official news story.
Health and Human Services Department rejected changes in Indiana's Medicaid plan Wednesday, saying it illegally bans funding for Planned Parenthood and sought to make clear that a similar fate awaits other states that pass legislation barring any qualified health care provider. State officials signaled that they would not accept HHS's decision.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there, but, you know. So far,
I don't know. I was reading something today that the last president to get reelected with anything above 7.2% unemployment was FDR. Something's going to have to happen with this economy. And like you were talking about house prices, there's some pretty bad indicators recently. So we're going to have to get medieval on corporations or something. Something's got to change. We either need stimulus part two or something's got to happen. But the historical numbers aren't good for an incumbent with, you know, anything above 7.2%. So yeah. I'm better get busy making some jobs.
Yeah. The housing situation is very, very grim. And
still hadn't bottomed out, but it can't go much lower. It can't get much worse.
Well, now it's at the same level it was, and we're jumping all around here, but now it's at the same level it was during its lowest number prior to the slight recovery. Yeah. So right now we're at the bottom of what would be a double dip.
Yeah. But, you know, again, who didn't see this coming? I mean, anybody that had done any sort of real estate, you know, buying or selling during the bubble just had to have had their head up their ass not to know that this was coming. Mm. Yeah. This bottoming out. I mean, I've told the story many times on the show that when I sold my house near Leesburg in Virginia, it just shook my head in disbelief at how much it was selling for. It just seemed like science fiction to me. Like, what is going on here? So, we just need to hit that bottom and then start work our way back up.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's gonna be a long road back up, I think, unless the Republicans lose significant numbers of House seats.
They will.
Next year.
If they keep clinging to this Medicare thing. Did you see... it was Lawrence, I guess, last night. He had a Republican congressman on who looked like just a big sack of crap. I can't even remember his name, but he was a Texas congressman who just looked like a big sunburned sack full of crap and was trying to defend this Medicare overhaul as being not a, you know, not killing Medicare. And, you know, he just had all the Republican talking points, you know, let the private industry sort it, you know, private sector sort it out and competition. And Lawrence was just kicking the shit out of him. And it's like, if you're going to so doggedly, you know, cling to this thing that everyone knows is a big stinker, they're going to lose harder than they think they are. In a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah, I almost want to shut up about it because
yeah,
and let them do it. I mean, I feel like just get, well, go on right. with your hatred of Medicare.
At you, yes,
you know, yeah, because it's
Ryan gets up there and says, "Well, I had to disabuse the president of his, you know, the president's talking about it wrong." It's like, no, bitch, he's not. He's not stupid. We all know what you're trying to do. You made a big colossal blunder. You put something in your little bill, and your speaker is so fucking retarded, so bad at his job, the way Rachel Maddow puts it. He's just bad at his job that he allowed it in there and then got a vote on, and everybody put their name on it. So yeah. Suck it. Enjoy it, dumbasses.
Right. We're going to get into it more. I want to talk about the housing prices a little more coming back after this. And we'll talk about, Sarah Palin. Show brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Father's Day is coming up, so buy some golf ball-shaped soap for your dad. Because all dads love golf balls.
And golf. Not mine.
I love the name of this thing. O-Balls Golf Soap Buckets for Father's Day.
O-Balls?
Yeah. It's June 19th, I believe it is. So if you don't order stuff now, you're going to be late. And here, of course, is Bubble Genius with a little bit more about that.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, let me ask you a question. You've gotten anything for your dad for Father's Day yet?
Oh, balls.
Yeah, I totally forgot, too.
No, I mean I got him Oh Balls soap. Bubble Genius makes soap that look like golf balls and smell like fresh-cut grass. In metal buckets.
Get out of town. He's crazy for the golf.
And it comes in 3 sizes. I'm getting my dad the large.
Do they have extra large?
Don't forget your dad this Father's Day. Bubble Genius has balls and more for the first man in your life.
BubbleGenius.com.
Just Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
I stepped in the bubble.
Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Make sure to enter your promo code, which is BOBANDELVIS, Bob and Elvis, for 15% off your entire order at BubbleGenius.com. And home prices hit another new low in the first quarter, down 5.1% from a year ago to levels not reached since 2002. It was the third straight quarterly drop for the S&P Chase Shill. Wait, what the fuck? God. You know what? You know what, people with your websites? Stop making them do crazy shit. Just put text.
Yeah.
Just make text. No flashing things or stuff that pops up or follows your cursor or moves when you scroll.
Yeah.
Just put text. Yeah. I'm much less inclined to hit your Facebook like button or your tweet button if it follows along as I scroll.
Yeah, I hate that.
Because it just annoys me and makes me want to click off of your site. And I'm looking at you, CNN money.
Oh, dear.
I'm trying to read this news story, and the page is jumping up and down. Everything that pops up onto the screen makes the page go up and down and move in random ways that make it impossible to actually read the content. I just had to vent. You know, it's shit like this that everyone tries to reinvent the wheel with the internet. Everyone tries to do something fancy schmancy with their goddamn content. And you know what it does? More often than not, it just pisses people off.
Yeah.
So you put your logo at the top. You put something good on the side that helps people to find their way around your site. and then you put all your content in a nice, neat, readable row, and you do not put flashing, popping shit, especially autoplay video.
What bothers me is the, like, HuffPo's expandable banner thing where you load a page and it's got the banner and then the banner drops down, and New York Times does this too now, where the whole banner just fills your entire fucking screen with an ad and you have to close it or roll it back up to get to the content. Pisses me off.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you know what? I was gonna read this story about home prices from the ABC News website, which is one of the first search results that comes up. If you go to Google News and you type in home sales or home prices, ABC News came up, but you know what? As soon as I open it up, it's a gigantic, it must be, you know, 700 pixels wide of George Stephanopoulos reading the news story to me.
Yeah.
Autoplay.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I just want, if I'm looking for information, I want to pop in. Who knows? I could be at work. I could be clandestinely trying to do this between, you know, rounds from the middle manager who's looking over my shoulder. Who knows? I don't want big audio jumping out at me. And I want to catch the content in the shortest amount of time possible and then move away. Thank you. Yeah. Is that too much to ask? No. No.
Who could have imagined, though, 10 years ago when we were first doinking around with the internet that that would even be possible, you know, to compress and stream videos so quickly and so thinly that it could just pop up and do that. I remember building my first website, and it was so, like, I had JPEGs on there that were so enormous it would take, over dial, it would take maybe 4.5 hours to load the entire site because I had no idea what I was doing. And now it's just, oh, you know, full, you know, really high quality video streaming is just no big deal.
Yeah. No. But I mean, on websites where you go to find video. If you're just a news presentation site, we don't need the video. Make a link that goes to the news story, or make it just rest there and not start automatically. ABC News, for Christ's sake. You know better than that.
Yeah.
How long has ABC and Disney, the parent company, been doing entertainment? Regardless, okay, let's get back to this, because now I can actually read it. It's now stabilized. The page has stabilized on my screen.
Oh, thank God.
Prices are now down 32.7% from their peak set 5 years ago. Quote, home prices continue on their downward spiral with no relief in sight, said David Blitzer, spokesman for Standard & Poor's. The index covers 80% of the housing market, and this month's report confirmed, quote, a double dip in home prices across much of the nation.
Have you seen Too Big to Fail yet?
No.
Oh, man. Paul Giamatti was – that guy could just become anybody, I think.
Yeah, who did he
played Bernanke.
Yeah, Ben Bernanke.
Looked exactly like him.
Did it.
Looked exactly like – yeah, it was amazing.
Did he work in some John Adams forehead zits?
I was watching that the other day too, John Adams.
Bad John Adams teeth.
Great show.
Was there a gratuitous smallpox inoculation scene?
Yeah, there was. Right in the middle of the financial crisis, they all get smallpox vaccinations.
Yeah.
Horrendous, man. That was horrible. It's amazing that they figured that out even that far back, though. You know, where they cut you and then they fill you up with smallpox and then hopefully you don't die. It was like 2%, but only 2% of them would. Like, I watched it. I watched John the last time I watched it. I watched it with the facts or stubborn things thing turned on. It was like it's like text based facts behind the movie. It's really cool. And it said that like 2-4%, something like that, of the inoculated would get it so hard that they would die. But that seems really low for back then.
Yeah,
it's pretty impressive that they could figure that out.
Medicine. Well, yeah, I mean, and a lot of times, too, the treatments are what would actually end up killing the people.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is 2-4%, that was it for the smallpox thing. If they cut you and filled you up with smallpox, only 2-4% of the patients that got that were killed by it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's unbelievably low for, you know, 18th century medicine.
Well, I'm speaking in terms of medicine in general. I mean, I think anyway, like I've been watching a lot of Civil War stuff on History Channel this week. It's Civil War week. Yeah. None of the soldiers would ever want to go to a hospital because
they just cut something off of you.
9 times out of 10. Yeah. Well, what would happen is they were so unsanitary. People would actually die from the unsanitary conditions of things they never would have died of had they just been left alone.
Yeah. Well, you know, 100 years before, at least 100 years before the revolution, they were, you know, they still thought that viruses and stuff, flus and illnesses were caused by the fucking devil. I mean, it was just, it's amazing how leaps and bounds things took. You know, after a certain time in history, they just stopped believing in demonic possession for the sniffles.
So Sarah Palin visited the Statue of Liberty in Ellis Island, and you know, sure. I don't give a shit what she's actually trying to do. What she's clearly doing is she's taking a vacation, a family vacation, and it's being paid for by her Sarah PAC donors.
Yeah. Which is, I'm pretty sure, illegal.
It's very illegal, but it's not surprising. This is what she does now. She gets paid to do things that she wants to do,
and that's great.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't think that she's going to run for president, because why should she? She's not in it to make money for herself.
Yeah,
I mean, she's nothing. She's really nothing more than, you know, Paris Hilton. Right. With arguably less talent
and less brains.
Yeah. But I mean, that's what she's all about. I mean, she's just become another celebudoof. I mean, she just doesn't, she's no aspirations beyond that, beyond being known or being famous. So it's not shocking when she says something like this at the Statue of Liberty.
It is, of course, the symbol for Americans to be reminded of other countries, because this was gifted us, of course, by the French, other countries warning us to never make the mistakes that some of them had made. This is a symbol, a reminder of what it is that we can do right in the name of freedom. And that's what I appreciate about the Statue of Liberty. I think it's great, too, all the symbolism.
Yeah.
Just represented in each aspect and detail of the statue.
You know, and that is why that's why I played those clips at the top of the show. This is nonsense. It's nonsense is what it is. She's not saying anything. I feel like we sound like a broken record on this, but I think we have to continue remarking about things like this, because she continues to be taken seriously in the political media.
Yeah.
And I mean, as a viable candidate. I mean, even Chris Matthews, who has been routinely just ripping her to shreds, still says that she's got this electric personality and people flock to her and she's got this charisma and you know, she's very attractive and she, you know, and still kind of pumps her up as being some sort of, if nothing else, some sort of puppet leader, that she could actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
But
why didn't somebody in that crowd challenge her? She's going to make with her word salad moronic bullshit. Why didn't somebody say, well, what about what it says on the plaque on the thing that the Statue of Liberty is holding? What about that? What about that, Sarah? What about not the symbolism of it, but the actualness of it, where it says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, etc. I mean, it's basically saying, you don't want them, we'll take them, because that's what America's all about. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore.
Nothing.
Ever heard of that, Sarah, you dumbass?
Right. And there's nothing about the Statue of Liberty that says, come in here and go through an immigration process.
Right.
There's nothing about that. It's basically saying, come on in.
Yeah.
And
send these, the homeless, tempest tossed to me. Mm. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. I got a big golden door. I got a lamp, and I want all your wretched, homeless, you know, dirty, flea-bitten, lice-ridden people, send them to me.
Yeah.
Why didn't somebody say that? I don't understand. You don't get a free pass just because you have a mouth and someone will point a camera at you. Why didn't somebody say that? Say, tell us about the new Colossus, Sarah, the poem, the sonnet that's written on the tablet there. Tell us about that, you stupid.
Yeah. Instead, they're asking her, what does the Statue of Liberty mean to you? Well, liberty, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
The
freedom and the gifted and the France. And thank you, France, and don't blow it.
Of course. Every time she says, of course, that's that part of her buried deep down that knows that says, everyone knows this but me, so I have to say, of course. Because I'm saying something that's so fucking obvious that to make me sound smart. Like 20 minutes before she got there, somebody said, Sarah, don't forget the Statue of Liberty came from France.
Yeah, it was gifted to us, of course.
Of course. Anytime someone says, of course, that's the subconscious stupidity in you going, everybody knows this. You were surprised to learn it, so you better say of course to make everyone else feel stupid.
So here's what else she said. Lady Liberty is the symbol of unity and friendship we have with other freedom-loving nations. It's also a warning of sorts, as France encouraged us to keep democracy alive as the recipient of this gift, basically telling us not to blow it. Thank you for this reminder, France.
What the fuck is she even talking about? She didn't say that. You're making that up.
I'm not making it up. She actually said this. Lady Liberty is the symbol of unity and friendship we have with other freedom-loving nations.
Okay, first of all, that's not true. It's basically a big fuck you. It's a big giant middle finger to everybody else.
Yeah.
Basically. It's like, we got it and you don't, suck it.
Mm-hmm.
She's so stupid.
It's also a warning of sorts, as France encouraged us to keep democracy alive as the recipient of this gift, basically telling us not to blow it. Thank you for this reminder, France.
Thank you for this reminder, France. What in the fuck is she even talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
She must have just tried to repeat the same thing to different media pools, because she also said, this Statue of Liberty, by the way, on Twitter, she called it the Statute of Liberty. But
she did not.
Yes, she did. Go look at her Twitter feed. It says Statute of Liberty with an extra T in there.
Oh, no, Sarah. She just doesn't know.
This Statue of Liberty. But she says,
monkey.
She says here, this Statue of Liberty was gifted to us by foreign leaders really as a warning to us. It was a warning to us to stay unique and to stay exceptional from other countries.
Oh, my God!
certainly not to go down the path of other countries that adopted socialist policies.
Oh, my God! So socialist France, yeah. Basically, Jesus Christ, yeah. She's so up her ass.
So socialist France says, don't you become socialist!
Right, we're going to take lessons on liberty from the country that just botched the living shit out of their own revolution, killing everybody. Fucking had the French Revolution was such a disaster, was such a fucking bloodbath disaster. We're going to say, oh, thank you, yeah, we need your help. You need to tell us about it. We're the ones that taught them how to get their revolution on, and then they fucked it all up.
See, and then
retard she is.
Exactly. And then you kind of have to go, well, what should she have said? Well, here's what she should have said. She should have, any leader who goes and visits a location like the Statue of Liberty or Ellis Island should be prepared with some kind of special insight, some sort of philosophy that's based around these things that actually have grounding in the history and symbolism of these two locations. Yeah. But instead, she like bullshits something about like something that's completely made up that she's pulling out of her ass, like an eighth grade student who hasn't studied and is called up to the front of the class for an oral exam and has to bullshit her way through it.
Yeah, that's only seen, you know, has to do a book report about a book that they've only seen the movie, you know, just completely missed the whole point.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Who wants chimichangas in our cafeteria? Not me.
Have you ever been to Ellis Island?
Yeah, oh yeah, I was just there.
It'll make you cry. I mean, it will reduce you to absolute tears if you have a historical bone in your body and you really are a true American, you know, just a real, it's an American with some sense of true, real, non bullshit history. It will really reduce you to just a puddle if you really soak it in. It's one of the most emotional experiences ever. Even though hardly none of my family went, I don't think any of my family went through it. I mean, like I said, we've been here since the beginning. You know, 1620, we've been here, so we didn't even have to fuck around with that. But it'll move you. If you really pay attention to it. And she just does nothing but shit on it.
Yeah.
Because she didn't know. She didn't know anything. She didn't know.
Here's her quote at Ellis Island.
Yeah.
Quote, the immigrants of the past, they had to literally and figuratively stand in line and follow rules to become U.S. citizens. I'd like to see that continue. And unfortunately, the DREAM Act kind of usurps that. The system that is a legal system to make sure that immigrants who want to be here legally work hard. You know what? First of all, I can't read this. I cannot
read it verbatim.
This
it'll make your
transcript
head so bad.
Let me try this again. The immigrants of the past, they had to literally and figuratively stand in line and follow rules to become U.S. citizens. I'd like to see that continue. And unfortunately, the Dream Act kind of usurps that. Dash the system that is a legal system to make sure that immigrants who want to be here legally, working hard, producing and supplying revenue and resources for their families, that they're able to do that right and legally.
Oh, my
Jesus
God.
Christ.
Let me try this again. Exhausting.
The system that is a legal system to make sure that immigrants who want to be here legally, working hard, producing and supplying revenue and resources for their families, that they're able to do that right and legally.
Yes. Yes. Word salad.
You know what? It's as if, you know, you have the wind. Reading something like that knocks like the energy out of you. It's so stupid that you go, I'm weak in the knees from this stupidity. I cannot sit upright. This is so stupid.
It's not even stupid. It just transcends. It's just a complete lack of an ordered mind. I mean, she's just a normal schmo doofus that just has no natural organization to her thought process. It's just the spill of – it's just word salad. I mean, it's not stupidity. It's just a disordered mind. Mm-hmm. Not in an insane way. It's just people that don't read, people that don't think critically. They have no – They can't just sit and talk extemporaneously off the top of their head without sounding like a fucking retard. That's just one of her major failings. It's just a disordered mind.
If you're a public personality, if you're in politics, if you're in government, or if you're in the media, your entire thing is coming up with the most razor sharp ways to explain things.
Communication.
With the least number of words possible.
And
to do so eloquently, I mean, you know, you say the least number of words, well, you say nice words, right?
Yeah, or at least the right ones.
Exactly.
You know, the minimal number of correct words to get what you're trying to say through.
That's right. And when you say something like, the system that is a legal system to make sure that immigrants who want to be here legally, working hard, producing and supplying revenue and resources for their families, that they're able to do that right and legally.
Hardly any of that is right. Resources? When's the last time you produced resources for your family? I got to go out and get some resources, family. I'll be back. I got to go get some resources, some ore, you know, some wood, some resources.
I got to supply some revenue for my family.
Well, I mean, at least
do some revenue.
Basically.
Right. It's like when she said, I love to smell them emissions or whatever she says at the beginning of that motorcycle rally. She says, I love them smell of them's emissions or something.
Yeah.
And she says, no one likes the smell of the emissions. All right. That's the most objectionable part of doing anything with a motor vehicle. I like them emissions.
Yeah. Unless she's being one of those anti-climate science douchebags that turn all their lights on and run their hairdryer all night on National Turn Off the Lights Day. Unless she's, you know, literally trying to court that vote, which, you know, maybe she's that stupid. Maybe she's that awful that she really does – that she meant to say emissions, you know, to pander that group of people that hate science.
Yeah. So what she's basically doing, she's using Ellis Island as a way to slam the Dream Act.
Of course.
Simply because she didn't know what the hell the Dream Act is. She says, this is what she says after.
Yeah.
They're able to do that right and legally. And then she continues by saying, unfortunately, the Dream Act doesn't accomplish that. Whatever it was that she just said, the Dream Act doesn't do that.
Right.
I don't know what she just said, but regardless, she says that the Dream Act doesn't do what she just said. Even though it does. So, and that's what Think Progress came out. Somehow Think Progress deciphered that garble of bullshit, right? And came up with the explanation, which is the accurate explanation, that the Dream Act does exactly what Sarah Palin wants it to do. Exactly. Yeah. Under the Dream Act, says Think Progress, under the DREAM Act bill that Republicans killed last December, applicants would have had to go through a rigorous process of background checks in addition to paying taxes, learning English, and either serving in the military or attending college. They would have to then receive a conditional non-immigrant status and would be required to, quote, stand in line for 10 years before being granted legal immigrant status. The Congressional Budget Office estimated that the same bill would reduce the deficit by $1.4 billion. Over 10 years. Yeah. Sarah Palin and the Republicans are against that.
Yeah.
I don't
they
know.
They call it amnesty.
Yeah, that's right. Even though this is a process that Sarah Palin would never be able to accomplish herself.
No.
Now, that's just the thing. I mean, all these people, Sarah Palin, all of these Republicans would have a really hard time passing just the basic American history aptitude test that they give to immigrants.
Oh, yeah. Oh, somebody like Boehner or Cantor. Those guys have no fucking idea. I mean, they're just stupid.
Right.
Just, I mean, literally stupid, stupid people.
And you know what I was thinking when I saw, Sarah Palin striding through a location that's sort of near and dear to me, which is Gettysburg.
Mm.
I was wondering if she was thinking that Gettysburg was the final battle of the Civil War. that is where... Because that's a common mistake. I think a lot of people do think that. And I'm not saying you're an idiot if you believe that. I'm saying that if you're a public figure running for possibly the presidency, you ought to know what a little bit about Gettysburg, right. Just a little bit, and at least know that it wasn't the war that ended. That wasn't the battle that ended the war.
Right.
But
that was the Battle of Bunker Hill, I believe, which took place in New Hampshire. That's according to Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, but she just—I mean—just a nonstop disaster. And
She's not running though. She's not going to run unless the only thing I can think of that would make her run is when the whatever commission or legislative body is responsible for policing PACs, you know, political action committees, if they say, excuse me, this whole tour you've been taking, you have to be actually running for something or you have to be in politics. Then she go, oh, well, if she's facing like millions of dollars of fines for using that money, you know, for her own vacation, then maybe she'll run just to get herself out of prison.
Yeah. Where's the investigation? I think Lawrence O'Donnell was talking about that the other night. Where's the investigation in terms of the campaign finance laws that she's violating?
Right. She's taking people's – it's literally being paid for by Sarah PAC. There's no dispute about that.
That's right.
And a political action committee, by definition, is raising funds from small, you know, sources for political action. Mm-hmm. So where is that component?
Yeah.
She is not a political figure. I don't care. Being a commentator, a talking head on Fox does not make you a political figure.
That's right.
PAC, the PAC in Sarah PAC stands for Political Action Committee.
And if she's taking it as some sort of income, is she reporting it on her taxes?
Yeah. How is that legal? Yeah. That cannot be legal. It cannot be legal.
It's not.
Or if it is, she's found some amazing loophole, and I'm going to go out and start Elvis PAC tomorrow.
I know. That's what I was thinking. Maybe we should start the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show PAC.
Yeah,
so we can go on awesome vacations with our own bus, with our giant bulbous faces printed on the side of it, and a copy of the Constitution.
Yeah, I'd say fine. I said let's do that.
Let's
just in general.
Great idea. We're going to get on that right after the show. The show brought to you by Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.com. Bath body products, the best soap you will ever buy or try and massage onto your body parts. You got Father's Day coming up on June 19th, so get your dad a bucket of O'Ball's golf ball soap. They're also Bubble Genius is going to be at Netroots Nation in Minneapolis from June 16th to the 19th, so be sure to stop by their booth to pick up a free soapy sample and free donuts.
Oh my god.
Maybe
may have to start eating donuts again.
Chris Christie will come by just for that. Take his official Homeland Security helicopter. Get some free donuts from Bubble Genius. Oh, and even if you don't live in my new home state, Hawaii, you got Kamehameha Day coming up on Saturday the 11th. Whether you live in Hawaii or you just want to join in on the celebration, make sure you have a tiki soap to get you ready for the holiday. They've got big ones and little ones at Bubble Genius. Kamehameha is like the George Washington of Hawaii. Like, yeah. Everywhere you go, it's like Kamehameha slept here.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, if you can deal with swear words, make sure to follow Bubble Genius on Twitter. And here's more about Father's Day with Bubble Genius. You know what? I screwed up.
Oh, you played my Elvis' game music.
I did. I pressed the wrong button. Here's more from Bubble Genius.
Hi. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, let me ask you a question. You gotten anything for your dad for Father's Day yet?
Oh, balls.
Yeah, I totally forgot, too.
No, I mean I got him Oh Balls soap. Bubble Genius makes soap that look like golf balls and smell like fresh-cut grass. In metal buckets!
Get out of town! He's crazy for the golf!
And it comes in 3 sizes. I'm getting my dad the large.
Do they have extra large?
Don't forget your dad this Father's Day. Bubble Genius has balls and more for the first man in your life.
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
It is. Soon to be a pack.
That's goddamn right.
So, I just got a few minutes left in the show. We're cutting it short. We're taking advantage of the fact that a few weeks have been really slow. So we're going to do shorter shows until there's actually some real news to talk about. Well, there's lots of real news, but
yeah.
It's not big news, not news like meaty news that you can sink your teeth into. Right. Let me see. What else do we have going on? Oh, yeah, the Breitbart thing. I don't even know what to say about it because I feel like anything I say about it actually gives it more credibility. And it doesn't attention media people. It is a big hoax. That's all you
know.
Need to report.
I just don't know about this story. I don't know why Wiener's not adamantly, permanently, completely on the record saying it's not him and he doesn't know where the there's something really weird going on here. I mean, yeah, I will agree that Breitbart is a douche and he shouldn't be trusted about anything and this story stinks 12 ways to Sunday, but I don't know why it stinks yet. I'm hoping I seriously hope that it's a massive sting put on by Wiener, like a literal sting to make Breitbart look like a douche. I'm hoping that's what it shakes out to be. But right now, I don't know what the fuck it is. I don't know.
It's a hoax. And insofar as Anthony Weiner has not necessarily denied that the picture could be him.
Right. He hasn't.
Means that it's entirely possible that Anthony Weiner took a picture of his underpants and had it on his hard drive. And so
they got hacked.
But you know what? Or had it on his phone or whatever. But it doesn't matter. There's nothing illegal about that. There's not even anything unethical about that.
Is he married?
Yeah, he's married. It could have been something he was sending to his wife.
I'm sure. Yeah, that happens all the time.
You're separated between your home district in Washington. You're back and forth. Maybe you get lonely. And if he's very romantic with his wife, maybe that's a maybe
that's
what he
the
does.
Worst explanation I've ever heard.
Well, you know, it's not out of the realms of possibility. It's certainly more possible than Breitbart being accurate on this.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping that it's like Jon Stewart and Wiener got together and said, "How can we punk the living shit out of Andrew Breitbart?" And like they created this Patriot 768 account. That's all part of the hoax. I mean, I'm hoping that it's just really something awesome like that.
Yeah, this is
because otherwise, I just don't understand it, and I don't want to talk about it.
Well, I mean, here's what Breitbart does. He takes things that people do and presents them in an awkward way in order to attain attention and money for himself.
No, sure.
And that's exactly what he's done here. So he's got some, whatever that the Twitter handle is, Patriot Guy USA 76.
Yeah.
Is clearly some sort of fake persona. And you know what? I wouldn't even put it past, you know, like his new lapdog, Lee Stranahan, to be somehow involved in that. But, you know, so someone's put together a fake persona, done a little bit of photoshopping. I mean, there's a great TikTok of the whole thing on the Daily Kos. And you can link to it from BobSeska.com. I posted the link to it this morning. And you can go there, and it's got a detailed rundown of what's happening. So this guy, whatever his Twitter handle, I don't want to give him any publicity. I don't want more followers. So you can find it. If you want to find out who it is, you can just go to the Daily Kos thing. But so this guy evidently knew about that he was going to do something like this weeks in advance.
Way in advance, yeah.
And he's got some issues, evidently. Mm-hmm. And this is the, again, this is this weird Twitter guy. And so there were emails released through the Smoking Gun today showing that this guy has got this sort of tinge of desperation about him, that he's going through all kinds of holy hell in his personal life, and he's constantly harassing Wiener. I mean, what it comes down to is the woman who was supposed to have received this, first of all, she's 21. It's not like sending it to underage people.
Right.
And has also denied that she even has communicated with Wiener.
Right.
This is a joke. This is a Wiener joke. And when Congressman Wiener's exactly right when he says this is a joke, because that's what this is all about. This is a big, it's a hoax, and it's presented as sort of a big meta joke.
Mm-hmm. Wiener.
Wiener.
Because it's Wiener.
Picture of the Wiener.
Uh-huh.
Picture of Wiener's Wiener. Haha, get it?
I do get it. You gonna play my gay music now?
Yeah. Where is it?
Here? Oh, you're so far behind.
I don't know.
Here's if it. I have to request my gay music,
yeah, sorry. I got it. You know what? Someone complained to me on Facebook, said that we liberals shouldn't be making fun of gay people, but we're not making fun of.
We're
gay
not
people.
Making fun. I'm gay. Oh, I get so tired of that. I hate liberals.
We're not making fun of gay people.
Oh. Admitting to an enormous streak of gayness in yourself is not making fun of gay people.
Exactly.
I'm not a self-loathing, closeted homosexual person. Mm-hmm. I love me the gay. I'm proud of my pseudo-gayness.
But there's certain characteristics. Special, yeah. Right. I mean, there's certain characteristics that make people gay. And it's not we're not making fun of gay people to say that Elvis sounds gay.
Good Lord, no. I'm embracing it.
We're not.
Not at all.
And we always say, not that there's anything wrong with it.
Well, this shouldn't be necessary. We're not saying derogatory things about homosexual people.
We're not.
For God's sakes, I hate liberals sometimes.
There's some people, it's like Louis C.K. says, there's some things that people do, regardless of whether they're gay or straight or whatever. There's some things that people do that are just funny. Right. There's nothing wrong with being gay. You be gay and get married and do whatever you want. Live your life. Right. But there's some things that people do that are just funny. Like he talks about, you know, the guy with wearing like spray painted green combat boots and little shorts and a half T-shirt with a whistle yelling for a taxi. That guy is funny. That's what Louis C.K. says. That guy is funny.
Right.
It's not that he's gay. He's just dressed in a funny way.
Right. And it's funny. So. And he also got this whole thing about how gay is not, you know, or queer is not what, you know, faggot is not what it meant to, you know, that's not what it used to mean, faggot. She's like, just don't be a faggot. You know, it's like when we were kids, everything was faggot this and faggot that.
Yeah.
I'm the least homophobic person in the universe, and I'm the last one on earth that would ever speak derogatorily towards gay people. So
and
whoever
again,
that was can suck it.
Let us reiterate. In one sentence, tell us about your tuxedo night with your friend. I mean, let's just really underscore the fact that there's no homophobia going on here.
Not at all. Yeah, we rented tuxedos. Uh-huh. We drove ourselves to New York City. We saw Hamlet starring Ralph Fiennes, and we stayed in the Algonquin Hotel in the same room together.
Now, the funny thing about that is picturing my friend and podcast partner doing that.
Right. Because I'm otherwise so masculine and rugged and frankly gorgeous.
Yeah.
That, you know, how could you, you know. I guess those things actually, except for the masculine part, really speak to my gayness, I guess. I'm not neat, though. I'm not neat at all. I'm a total slob. I'm not fastidious.
So the last thing we're doing is making fun of being gay, because there's some things. I mean, earlier in this very show, I admired Christian Bale's chiseled abs from American Psycho.
Right. You can't not admire that. I mean, and frankly, I don't find Christian Bale attractive at all. I mean, facially, I think he's kind of weird looking. I mean, I'd much rather screw George Clooney than Christian Bale. I mean, I just love me some George Clooney.
Of course.
But those abs, that body that Christian Bale had in American Psycho cannot be beat.
Right.
That's, yeah, that cannot be beat. And I also had a lovely gay absinthe night with a friend where we had very rich, delicious foods and drank absinthe together. That was extremely gay.
That's right.
But I'm not going to apologize to anybody for it, and it was just a gay thing. So whoever said that can suck it.
Yeah. We're not making fun of gay.
God, no.
My dad's gay.
Yeah.
It's from Seinfeld. That's my dad isn't gay. That's from Seinfeld. That's from the Seinfeld episode. George just blurts out, "We're not gay. My dad's gay."
You want to have sex with me right now? You want to have sex? Come on, baby. I love that episode.
You know, this is, it's all, you know, seriously, it's all a comment on, it's satire, if you will, of, you know, American male paranoia about gayness. That's all it is.
And I obviously have proven that I have none of that. I
exactly.
Give a shit. If you think I'm gay, whatever. You know, I have no problem talking about, I had friends and, well, I did before I moved, you know, to the middle of nowhere, but I had friends who were guys who I loved like siblings and whose company I really enjoyed, but it didn't involve, you know, any sort of penetration. But I think it's, you know, what some of the greatest movies, like think of it, like Shawshank, that is a gay movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is just, that movie is about man love, about loving. It's just a best friend kind of movie, and everyone in the world loves that movie.
Yeah.
It's like Top Gun, extremely gay.
That's right.
It's the gayest movie I've ever seen, Top Gun.
Yeah.
There's just this undercurrent of it, and talking about it, this is the least thing in the world I'm making fun of gay. Oh my God. Mm. I hate liberals. I swear to God I do. Mm. We're so self-defeating.
Yeah.
If I just can't have an honest conversation about myself and speak about it in you know, the way that it should be spoken about, fuck, that person can feel free to never listen to this show again.
Yeah. You know what? And typically, you know what I would do in this situation? I would ban them from the show.
You're banned.
You're banned. You can no longer listen to the show. You're forbidden.
Stop your disgusts on the comment stream. You can no longer say things.
That's it. That's
it's like
right.
Trouble for saying retarded a lot. Mm. Like, oh, that's fucking retarded. Oh, you should say that. Mm. It's like, I'm not making fun of mentally impaired people. It's just a good word. Retarded.
Mm. Right.
I just enjoy that word, retarded. Fucking retard. I'm not going to go up to a mentally impaired person and call him a retard.
You want homophobia? Talk to Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant's got some issues.
Yeah. Homophobia. And most of the ones with issues are just closeted homosexuals themselves, or they've got real problems. They've got real serious problems.
Go to YouTube and look at any random clip of the Sacha Baron Cohen Bruno character from the original TV show, not the movie.
The movie
was not so good.
It was a failure.
The TV show Brunos were, though, especially go look at, here's some homophobia for you. Go look at, do a YouTube search for Bruno Spring Break.
Oh, wow.
And where he's with a bunch of guys, bunch of college guys from a wrestling team.
Oh, God. Wrestling is the gayest thing in the world.
And they are doing this thing.
Oh, it is so gay.
And so Bruno's getting them to do this thing over and over again where where he wants them to be enthusiastic for German television. And so they're doing this thing where they're rocking out and they're taking their shirts off and they're jumping off of the top of their van and getting really, like, enthusiastic and crazy on the beach. And then
it's
And then he says it at the very end, now say hello to German gay television.
Right.
And they're like, what? What are you talking about, man? I mean, this is after they've basically stripped down and, like, you know, showed their
humped
asses
each other
and humped each
minutes.
Other. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they turn on him. I mean, it is a remarkable thing to watch.
Yeah.
That's homophobic.
That's why I didn't enjoy the movie so much, is that it seemed to, even more than Borat, it seemed to just go after the too obvious target. You know, it's like, oh, you mean hunters in the middle of nowhere are going to be obviously and violently homophobic? Gee, really? You know, it was like the target was too obvious. Yeah. You know, Borat was just funny, fall down funny, just regardless of the people he was going after. But it seemed a little cruel in the Bruno film.
Yeah, it did. Bruno was kind of painful to watch.
Yeah.
And
Bruno, I mean, Borat was painful to watch, but in a funny way.
Yeah, Bruno, I've never laughed so much in a movie theater.
I don't think I have watching either. And it was remarkable because he basically redid all the things he'd done on the show. I mean, I'd seen 90% of that already. Right. You know, he just went after different victims. Mm-hmm. Like I love the Southern Belle thing because that's the whole environment I grew up in. You know, the dinner club or whatever in the Deep South that he went to and took a shit in a bag and brought it out to him. He has balls of steel, that guy.
As the one guy, he said, what do you do? And the guy says, I'm retard. And he says, you ought to retard?
You ought to retard?
I'm retard.
Yeah. Oh, I just love, I mean, just there's nothing funnier than watching people just be so uncomfortable, you know? The whole basis of Curb Your Enthusiasm, just massive uncomfortableness.
That's right. Or the great completely fictional. I mean, it's sort of semi reality for Borat, but the completely fictional thing with uncomfortable characters is the UK version of The Office.
Oh yeah.
Nothing is more uncomfortable than that. But
yeah. Because Ricky Gervais had the balls to just leave the camera running, you know?
Yeah.
You can't get away with that in American TV. That we just don't have the patience for.
So whenever I think of that show, I just think of that scene when he's laid off and then has to get up and he's wearing that ostrich suit. Right?
Yeah. Oh.
He's got to go down and do that photo op. In the ostrich suit. Make it peck around a little bit.
Yeah.
I walk around and he's just been fired. So anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. Fudge with us. You're fudge with the best. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Take care, everybody.